If you are testing a novel drug or medical device, you're going to have some clinical trials. And these days, that usually means you're working with a CRO, a contract research organization. You might as well learn how to do it right. I'm Jeff Stewart from Syneos Health Consulting. Today on the Syneos Health Podcast, I'm joined on the floor of a pharma leadership conference by Judy Swilly, Executive Vice President and Head of Strategic Alliance Management here at Syneos Health. Getting the most out of your CRO next on the Syneos Health Podcast. We're talking today about how a company works with a CRO, a contract research organization, someone who runs your clinical trials. And I think it's fair to say that any company that works and develops a drug is going to work with a CRO at some point. So you're here to tell us how to do that.
Yeah, and really to talk about longer-term partnerships with CROs. Mm-hmm. I think where a customer can really reap maximum benefit from working with a CRO is having a longer, more established relationship where you start to get efficiencies in scale, probably financial benefits as well from that type of engagement. And things that maybe aren't quite so obvious with resource management, for example, where maybe you get resources that are familiar with a compound or a particular therapeutic area that can move from study to study within a portfolio of projects.
If you're on the other side of the table, I think you hear something like this and you say, well, it's something I'm just buying a service. What's the problem?
Yeah, I think so many of the horror stories are based on lack of real trust, quite honestly, where maybe misalignment in expectations as well, where maybe advice was given by the CRO, say, around maybe a protocol design based on real experience, real data, and a great conversation was had around that with timelines for delivery, for first patient in, last patient out, etc. But the advice is not listened to.
Yeah.
Not saying that we are the be-all and the end-all and we know it, but we certainly have extensive experience in so many areas. And I think in a true partnership, to have that input earlier on in the process can pay dividends down the road in terms of the outcome and probably in the quality of the trial as well.
So my understanding is that once you've gotten a request for proposal, an RFP, that it's often too late because people have really put their flag in the sand and they've said, this is what we want you to deliver on. What do we know that they don't?
It's not so much, I think, what do we know that they don't? I think it's, you know, we work with multiple sponsors, multiple customers, multiple geographies. So we certainly have experience in many ways, a broader scale, I guess, maybe in terms of what's actually happening out there right now with specific studies in the marketplace and can bring that real life information to a current opportunity. So I agree with you. When you get an RFP, it can be too late at the same time. I think it's critical that we provide real feedback. We don't want to enter into a commitment to deliver a study where we know that meeting some of those deliverables is frankly not possible. I mean, that does not help anybody, right? It doesn't help the patient in the long run either. So I think we have to provide real and honest feedback. That may mean, and it certainly has been the case, we don't then win work because maybe that went against the customer's particular requirements or wishes, but we have to be honest in that feedback and give, I think, our best opinion.
I've known this from the regulatory side that there are ways to make trials better. There are adaptive clinical trial designs. There are ways of doing things differently. I don't know what those are. That's your business, not mine. But if we're getting the design and we're asked to execute on the design without making it, is that a mistake that people are making when they work with a CRO, not just us, anyone?
Yeah, I think it can be. And I think that's where, again, if you can get into a longer term relationship with a CRO and they understand the process that a particular customer uses to make those decisions and can input into that process earlier. I think in all honesty, in my mind, that's probably one of the biggest areas still in the industry where the CROs are not used as much as they should be, because we have so much data at our fingertips, so much expertise. I would say it's more of the exception than the norm, even in partnerships, for us to be involved in a lot of those really early development conversations at a protocol stage. Where we are, I think we have some good stories to talk to in that case. But honestly, that's one of the harder discussions that we still have to this day. And I think it's an area of real opportunity in this business.
That's true of phase two, phase three.
Mm-hmm.
Is it really true of phase one, or is phase one really more or less, you know what you're getting and straightforward?
Yeah, I think it's a little, I'm certainly no phase one expert, I'll be clear about that, but it is a little different.
So in phase two, phase three, you can do this with any CRO and go there and say, mm-hmm. how would you do this trial? And you might get a better answer than you would if you just went in and told them, do it this way.
It's possible. I think it has to be a collaborative discussion, right? Mm-hmm. And certainly CROs have broad reaching experience now in a number of different therapeutic areas, some obviously with expertise in areas that others don't necessarily have. But I think we have real-time data from doing similar studies in the same indication. We know the sites. We know the sites that have recruited well, those that haven't. We know the regulatory hurdles. We can bring all of that into the picture.
So let's say I'm a private equity person and mm-hmm. I have a company and I just want to hire someone to do my phase two, three trial.
Mm-hmm.
What things actually matter? What are the right questions to be asking of any CRO?
I think it's about experience in the particular indication that you're looking at. Have we taken a drug through that development mm-hmm. process? Geographic coverage, access to patients. Do we have real information that we can use to support the delivery of that study? Do we have an experienced project team? Interestingly, every sponsor has slightly different requirements with that, but nevertheless, I think that's very important. Good fit, I think, with the sponsor is very important as well, so that from a cultural perspective, there can be that trust that I talked about before built up between us and the customer. I think those would be some starters for sure.
But as a person that worked in mergers and acquisitions, mm-hmm. pricing and market access, clinical trials recruitment seems like, well, some of the things would be very, very straightforward. If I'm recruiting an asthma trial, do I really need somebody who's had a lot of experience in asthma? I don't know. But in orphan drug, I think I might want that exact orphan
yeah.
patient. Is there a spectrum of what you need experience on?
Yeah, there is to some degree. But I think the reality is for any clinical study, there's a timeline. Right, to get that study done. There is a reason for getting that study done, and time is always one of the drivers. So I think you've got to have the most accurate, up-to-date information based on either current studies or recent studies that maybe did or did not enroll in a similar population so that you can really bring that to life for that particular project. Every project is a little bit unique.
If I were starting out with a new company, again, going back to that private equity company, mm-hmm. what else do I need to know to be able to interact well with the CRO to make not just the best buying decision from a price perspective, but making a seriously good buying decision? I have bought more than I would have otherwise.
Yeah. I think it's about their delivery, their overall delivery metrics that they have in that particular space. What type of leadership oversight do they bring to bear for a particular project? And I think that becomes even more important when you look at a portfolio and get into bigger book of business, essentially.
How do I know those things, though? I mean, I'm new to the area. How do I know that it's good or bad?
Face-to-face meetings, you've got to get data. Every CRO should be able to produce metrics, KPIs that will show you how well they have performed in a particular space, whether that's their study startup metrics in different countries and regions, whether it's their enrollment metrics for a particular study, recognizing that there are different criteria in every study, but it's getting data around performance, essentially. But I think that's part of it. I think fit as well, that cultural fit and the team trust is another very, very key element.
I think that probably it's got to be a truism that anytime that you have the business as a CRO with a client, you'd never want them to leave. And every time that you are a CRO and they have the business with a different CRO, you always want them to leave. Can you talk about switching costs? When is the switching cost high? When is the switching cost low?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. And I think those situations do arise. Usually when they arise, they're based on performance and delivery issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really is all dependent on how far you are into the study. Obviously, if you're more into enrollment, I mean, you've got all your sites set up and everything, the cost to switch, you've still got to switch all the notifications around the different sites and the countries, etc. It can still be pretty high even later on in the study. So I think those oftentimes become probably harder decisions to make. Certainly is probably somewhat easier to switch a study in the earlier stages when you're still really going through the setup of the study. in all situations, they're never straightforward. And getting the transparency of real data, so what is the real active status of the study, becomes, I think, critically important. And that can be easier sometimes than in others, just depending on how, I guess, open and willing the other CRO is in terms of the transparency of that data.
So tell me about what makes a CRO a good partner when it's a good partner. What makes a pharma company a partner that a CRO wants to work with?
Yeah, great question. So we have a number of different length relationships with customers. Mm-hmm. And honestly, each one is a little different, as you would expect. And some, in all honesty, have been more successful than others. I think some of the building blocks, some of the foundations for that success lay in probably a number of the following. First of all, having true transparency upfront. So really knowing what the overall goals are for that partnership, very clearly aligned, that you have a joint vision for the partnership, being transparent about the good things, and also if there are a couple of warts around, you know, that you're very open and honest about that, and you have a discussion and a plan to solve for that going in. Very aligned executive leadership, I think clearly understanding the overall goals of the partnership, having good collaboration really at all levels. I've seen examples of partnerships maybe where the executive level is very aligned, but for whatever reasons, that maybe that change management internally at the customer, maybe some of the messaging is not necessarily delivering some of the change that's required. Maybe when you move from one type of outsourcing partnership to another, you can then get misalignment at that point, and that's not good. That's hard enough when you're dealing with one study, let alone a suite of projects or a program or portfolio.
You said you have to have a shared vision.
Mm-hmm.
Really? What if the vision is, I hired you guys to do a job for me?
I understand that, but I think in a partnership, we all need to know, what are we aiming for? What are we trying to achieve out of this? What's most important in this particular partnership? And interestingly, I think that applies to when you're talking about quality, overall delivery, and how does the financial package, how does the financial setup help you meet those goals, or in some cases, you know, potentially hinder as well?
Working around a lot of clients and with a lot of different CROs, I have noticed a common theme. Recruitment is not going quickly enough. What is the deal with recruitment not going quickly enough? Is it just the plans are nonsensical? I mean, is that the right word? Ambitious?
Yeah. I think it's very multifaceted. I really do. I think sometimes the protocol criteria can be too exclusive, and you're really not able to find a patient that's going to fit the criteria for the study. That's where I think there have to be very clear upfront discussions around that. It could come back to the sites, the countries that you've chosen, and indeed, it really all comes back to having good, robust, real data at the beginning on which to base the timelines and the deliverables for the study. Nobody can ever predict and say with 100% certainty that we're going to hit last patient out on this date. But obviously, through good data, good projections, good information, and by using the methodologies to make sure that you're kind of pulling all of that together to give a robust plan, I think you are optimizing your probability of a successful delivery of that trial.
I wonder if you've also noticed this, that just the general way that science has changed in the last 30 years, or molecular biology, mm-hmm. we're driven by targets.
Mm-hmm.
And targets are not as patentable as they once were after Rochester decision. So everybody is going to the same spot on the map, the treasure map, so to speak, and digging in the same darn spot. That makes it hard to recruit a clinical trial if everyone else has the same triple negative breast cancer.
Absolutely. And I remember situations in a number. I mean, RA is another disease state where 10 years ago, these were the countries that you had to go to, right? And they got absolutely overloaded with everybody going to these same places. So what happens? The patient population dries up. So that's kind of the real-time data I'm talking about, knowing what's going on out there and using that for your planning purposes so that you're then driving a better outcome again.
Judy Swilly, thanks so much for being on the Syneos Health Podcast.
Thank you. You're welcome. Enjoyed it.
That's all for today's episode of the Syneos Health Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Stewart from Syneos Health Consulting. If you have comments, suggestions, questions,
or if you just want to talk through a particular challenge that you have at your life sciences company, you may email me at podcast@syneoshealth.com. That's syneoshealth.com. We're consultants. That's what we do.